On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When I went down to interview David Mack, he was in solitary down in Alabama. And again, when I got down there, I met with another FBI agent from the local office. So there were two. There's two of us right there for the whole interview. Nobody knew about this. Okay, LAP did not know about this before I went down. When I came back, just like was standard protocol for my bosses, is I briefed people, the higher ups at LAPD, and told them, you know, what I had just done, that I had talked to David Mack. Okay, that's where it should have ended. Two interesting things happened. One is next thing you know, Chuck Phillips writes an article, and he's quoting David Mack, where Mack is supposedly talking about me and the interview and things like that. Well, two things. One is why is Chuck Phillips writing about this? How does Chuck Phillips even know about this? Okay, well, we all know now how Chuck Phillips found out about this. It's because LAPD told him about it. Well, the interesting thing was how did the DA's office find out about it? Again, it's only me and the FBI agent. That's it. And I brief my bosses, and then I brief the higher ups at LAPD. So obviously, they have to tell somebody at the LADA's office.
As we get deeper into the FBI files data dump, one correlation came to mind. At every step of the investigation by the FBI and Phil Carson, he had to constantly communicate to his bosses and many investigators within the FBI exactly the path he wanted to take to get further evidence and information that would lead to a prosecutable case. We also find out that AUSA David Vaughn was privy to what Carson was doing. He was talking to Carson about the case. And he also was making sure that Phil Carson had the important elements to build a case with the United States Attorney's Office. In these next batch of documents, Vaughn instructs Carson not to share information with the LAPD, as they both were aware that investigative information was being leaked out by the LAPD directly to Chuck Phillips and the LA Times. Every time I go back and read these documents, my emotion is one of anger, shock, and sheer disbelief that all these powerful individuals were willing to hide the truth, hide evidence, hide information, ignore their duty as homicide investigators. I also wonder if this happened today, with the microscope on law enforcement as it is, would a case like this be able to be managed politically the way that Bratton, Burkow, and other leaders within the city and robbery homicide sort of just kept this all internal? It is almost mythical at this point that this many people who knew the truth were able to look the other way. I understand it in a sense. We all have to pay our bills, take care of our families, and paychecks on a month-to-month basis means something to anyone working inside a police department. I am surprised to this day that more people have not come forward to talk about their role in this. Or maybe, as I've seen over and over in various stories about police corruption and the badge, the blue wall of silence has strong tentacles, and it still does.
We tend to resent being judged by outsiders. Thus, if we know of somebody committing a wrong, we tend to stand by that officer simply because he's one of us.
Policing has always had cultures, and it's always an individualized culture of its own. separate from society.
We tend to erect this blue wall of silence. We erect a barrier, a shield, to protect our own. It's nothing new. It's been going on long before I even became a cop in the 70s.
Well, I've seen the retaliation happen. I've seen people transfer. I've seen officers quit and go to another agency because they just refused to be a party to it. That is a very difficult position to be in because this position, policing, is about trust.
You have to encourage officers to step forward. They can't be allowed to fear backlash from their peers because they choose to do the right thing while others choose to remain silent.
The next file dump is from April 22nd of 2004. It was a memo to Mary Jo Marino. It was defined as a restricted document, and the synopsis as written was to communicate investigative leads and future leads, which I think, to me, always exhibits that the work Phil Carson was doing included work that he, in the end, was not allowed to pursue. Some of this information has been mentioned prior, but this is organizing it into one focused memo with some added details that I find important.
Here's the interesting thing. I don't open up a case like this unless people at the very top sign off on it. And Director Mueller was on email chains getting updates on this case. He knew what the ramifications were of this. If he wanted to shut this thing down, he could have shut it down. He didn't. But again, they all have to sign off on it. For somebody to prosecute a case like this, everybody has bosses. They would have to sign off on it.
The captioned case was initiated when Special Agent Carson approached Special Agent Gene Stapleton after watching a VH1 special on the Biggie Smalls murder. After watching this one-hour special, Carson noticed a lot of similarities regarding the case. The Rafael Perez Rampart scandal case, the David Mack bank robbery, and the Ruben Palomares case, which Carson had been working full-time for the past 2.5 years.
I explained to my boss when I told him that, hey, I'm looking at, you know, how the bank robbery of Mack went down, you know, in terms of these are, you know, decorated police officers and the radios and tactics and all that sort of stuff that he used to pull that off. And that there were two, we know for a fact that there were the two other people, his accomplices, but that's never been discovered or they've never figured out who those two people are. And then we went into Rampart and again, how they were able to, you know, all these officers, how rogue they went. And these are well decorated LAPD officers. And then you fast forward into the Palmeros case and how they not only were there a couple of LAPD officers and the LA sheriff guy, but they went and bought uniforms for the other people and they used guns and they used badges. Everything was all well orchestrated. And then when I saw the Biggie thing, it had the exact same tone or vibe to it.
Special Agent Carson advised Special Agent Stapleton that all four of these cases had certain elements in common. They all involved LAPD officers who were decorated officers that worked in the Rampart and or the Southeast Division. It used telephone and Nextels to communicate with accomplices while committing their crimes. Officers who knew each other, worked together, hung out together, were all well-respected and manipulated other officers to become involved in their criminal activity.
There's no cops around, zero cops around at all. Somehow, miraculously, a fire alarm gets pulled and there's a lot of commotion. So whatever normal police officer, on-duty police officers were taken away from that area, I mean, that's a well-orchestrated, you know, murder. And when you go back, and again, when you look at what Mac pulled off at the bank robbery, which he pulled off with other two accomplices, which has never been, he'd never figured that out, who those people were, but how he was able to put that together and pre-ordering the money with his girlfriend. You see what happened with the Palmeros case, You see how the Rampart case went. I mean, this thing, it's like, it's the exact same movie with different characters. That's all it is.
Special Agent Carson has been able to view LAPD's entire Bicky Smalls murder case file, Russ Poole's entire working case file before he left the LAPD, and the civil attorney's entire case file. After reviewing all these files, it was determined there were several leads that should have been or need to be followed up on. Initially, Special Agent Carson requested from Deputy Chief Mike Burkow to have LAPD IA Sergeants Roger Mora and Steve Sambar assigned to work the case, which was granted. Chief Bratton and Deputy Chief McDonald were aware of this and approved it. Very interesting point. Bratton and McDonald approved this work to then pull it back. Mora and Sambar went to New Orleans with Carson on two separate occasions to meet and discuss captioned case and potential leads. The following is a list of investigative leads that Phil Carson has conducted to date in a brief summary of the results. 1. He interviewed LAPD officer Frank Liga, who was approached by actor Tom Sizemore several years ago, who told him David Mack and Kevin Gaines approached him, Sizemore, at a party and told him if he needed someone taken out, they could do this for him.
All the crap that I've learned over the last 27 years all go back to what Poole's theory was. And like I said, I have no interest. I had no interest in Death Row or Biggie Smalls or nobody. I didn't know any of those people. Didn't know who they existed. I know nothing about the murders. I just know that LAPD was heavily involved in Death Row.
Sizemore wrote a letter regarding this to the LA Times and Chief Bernard Parks, and supposedly still has a copy of this letter on his computer. According to Liga, nothing ever happened here regarding Chief Parks, the LAPD, or the LA Times. Number 2, Carson developed an FBI source who stated he grew up with subject Amir Muhammad and was told by him he, Amir, shot Biggie Smalls.
Valdemar, who's a 31-year veteran, has a stellar resume, has 100% nothing but great things to say about Psycho Mike. That he was 100% reliable and was very successful in helping them, you know, whatever, do a lot of great search warrants as well as arrests. Tim Flaherty, who's a good buddy of mine, who's retired now, operated him. Amir had confided in him. And the reason that Amir knew Psycho Mike and confided everything with him and even told him that he committed the murder is because Amir was good friends with Psycho Mike's brother. And he knew what Psycho Mike's brother, you know, was capable of doing or what he had done. And I don't want to say he was scared of Psycho Mike, but I think everybody was a little bit, you didn't want to piss off Psycho Mike just because of knowing what his history was. So I had nothing but great dealings with Psycho Mike.
This was the San Diego source meet slash operation that was leaked out to the LA Times. Carson has served approximately 10 subpoenas to facilitate finding out information and toll records about Amir. Now, this is important. Carson filed 10 subpoenas on Amir Muhammad. This is also information that's never been leaked publicly. 10 subpoenas on Amir Muhammad. Carson also tracked down detectives located in New Jersey that say the two individuals who were convicted of murdering Yafu Fula, the key witness in the Tupac murder, has ties to Suge Knight. Allegedly, one of the shooters had an uncle or relative inside the car with Knight and Tupac when Tupac was shot. Fula's murder happened after Tupac's murder occurred in New Jersey at Fula's girlfriend's apartment, execution style. When speaking with the New Jersey detectives, they state They've always felt something very fishy about Fula's murder, and it was obviously a contract hit.
I introduced Gaddafi to my cousin. I introduced them together, and they became friends. They started building their own relationship even without me, you know? My little cousin Roddy, he always had a gun on him, you know what I mean? He said that he was playing with the gun, pointed it in the face of Gaddafi, and the gun accidentally went off. So eventually, I went to New Jersey. I flew to New Jersey, and even people from my hood wasn't letting me know where my cousin was. It was like they was hiding him out. My brother and them was like, we don't know where he at. And I'm like, man, that's strange. Nobody know where he at, you know what I mean? Right. So eventually, he was in the projects. He was hiding out in the projects, and I was able to go see him. So he was in the staircase in the project. I'm like, man, what happened? And I think he was eating on some sunflower seeds or something, but his face looked numb, you know? He was like, it was an accident. I said, okay, if it's an accident, man, turn yourself in then. You know what I mean? And for me saying that in front of my whole block, everybody got guns, everybody got weapons. They all drug dealers and murderers and street cats, and they looking at me like, turn yourself in. We don't do that over here. But I'm like, look, man, Gaddafi, this, you know, I don't want to harm my little cousin. And I knew if he would have stayed on the streets, ain't no telling what would have happened. And I just want to see some type of retribution. Like, you saying it's an accident, then turn yourself in. You know what I mean? Eventually, he turned himself in. And he did about 7-8 years in prison. I just really want to, accept it as an accident, you know, because I don't want to think, you know, something intentionally happened to Gaddafi, you know.
I'm always traveling, always on the road. And the first thing I do whenever I get settled into a new city is I DoorDash items I know I can't live without. And it almost feels like home. Water, alcohol, a charger from my phone, snacks, food from delicious local restaurants, and breakfast in the morning, because you can't cook when you're living in a hotel. DoorDash, your door to more. So download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything from pet food to snacks to neck braces, alcohol, toothpaste, Joy-Con controllers for you gamers out there. Pretty much anything. You can get it. You must be 21 plus to order alcohol and drink responsibly. Alcohol is only available in select markets. DoorDash, go download it. Come on, get it done. Immerse yourself in the fascinating tale of Song of Solomon by the legendary Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Toni Morrison. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that has captivated readers around the world. Follow the protagonist, Milkman Dead, who was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt at flight. For the rest of his life, Milkman, too, will be trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and himself in his Rust Belt hometown, to the place of his family's origins, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and seeresses, liars, and assassins, the inhabitants of a fully realized black world. As the New Yorker put it, Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personality. Whether you're a seasoned reader or new to Toni Morrison, Song of Solomon is a must-read that will ignite your imagination and leave you wanting to read more Morrison. Song of Solomon, a timeless tale that will stay with you long after you've turned its final page. Available now at tonimorrison.com and wherever books are sold. The Dossier is sponsored by BetterHelp. I can't tell you how important it is to set aside some time for you and only you. I gotta be honest. A therapist at BetterHelp made me realize that balancing work, family, friends, and personal growth is a choice. You can make it happen. If you've struggled to make a decision on therapy, why not start today by getting more information on BetterHelp and their therapists? It's entirely online, flexible, and adjust to your schedule. So no excuses, Dossier listeners. So come on, visit betterhelp.com/dossier to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/dossier. Go check them out. Carson interviewed Dale Williams, the individual who had admitted stealing the van and being paid $10,000 for the getaway car in the David Mack robbery, as well as his father, Charlie. The father stated he was the guardian or mentor for Mack and stated, "Law enforcement officers or the military had to help orchestrate the murder. Charlie works for the city and will ask around and try to get any information possible." Dale stated he has a friend or acquaintance in Northern California who knew Mack had long braided hair, which Carson confirmed from his interview of Mack. When asked if this friend did time with Mack in prison, committed any crimes with him, or has visited Mack in prison, and what his name and how he can be located, Dale stated he wanted an attorney. His father, Charlie, stated he would talk with his son and get back to Carson. Carson spoke to Ron Siebold, the attorney for Mark Hyland, who is currently incarcerated at Mule Creek State Prison, who stated he, Hyland, helped transport the guns and money to help facilitate the murder.
They were talking about planning on how to get the monies and the weapons together. One of the individuals, I do not recall who, said, "Why don't we just get them from evidence like you normally do?" And they all kind of laughed and chuckled and everything. At that point, my jaw about dropped, realizing that, yeah, there's a lot of booze going around here and a lot of drugs going around, but these guys seem very serious. I mean, they were serious. They transported monies interstate between Los Angeles and Phoenix to arrange the hit on Biggie Small.
Siebold is attempting to set up an interview with Carson and is flying up to the prison. This is at that time. This isn't now. This is back in 2004. Carson spoke to Harry O, who stated when he gets out of prison in approximately 8 months, he will cooperate in getting Suge Knight, possibly even wear a wire. So this is Harry O telling Carson he'd wear a wire. Harry O has stated with other FBI agents corroborating that Harry O is the only person Knight is scared of and can do whatever he wants when he gets out of prison. Harry O is an OG bounty hunter who put up $1.5 million to help start Death Row Records. This, again, is in the FBI documents, not me saying this. Number 7 on this list, Carson spoke with Roy Thomas, an inmate at Wayside, who has worked numerous cases with the sheriffs and provided credible information resulting in successful arrests and searches. He stated David Mack was contracted out to kill Biggie Smalls. Thomas witnessed several people pull guns out to kill Biggie at an award ceremony, but were told not to by Tupac, who told Biggie never to come back to California again.
They pulled up in a Hummer. Suge and them pulled up in a Hummer. I don't know exactly, you know, who was in the joint besides him and Pac, but, you know, Pac was leaning out the window, "Yo, y'all on the west side, get this shit over with right here and now." Suge was talking to some Food of Islam dudes, the bow tie dudes. He was talking to them, but he was like, "Wrestling. It was me, Big, Un, and C's, and some security dude." So I just slid the burnout, because I don't know what dude, you know, what his intentions was. And, you know, he seen the gun. "Oh, he got a strap." But it was a bunch of dudes with death row pieces with burgundy, you know, I would assume they were some power rule. I had a bunch of burgundy hoodies and sweatshirts with death row chains. So, you know, it was definitely not pretty.
Thomas also stated that word going around in the California prisons is that a guy named Harry O is going to kill Suge Knight when he gets out. 8, Kevin Hackey again, officer from Compton who works security for Death Row. Number 9, Carson went and interviewed David Mack, who, according to LA City Attorney Paul Paquette, wants to speak with Special Agent Carson again and is willing to take a polygraph test about his involvement in the murder. Shortly after, Paul Paquette called Carson and told him this. Paquette met with the civil attorneys and told them how this was a setup by him to undermine the FBI's case. An LA city attorney, Paul Paquette, wanted or was going to Carson to say that Mac was going to do a polygraph test. But this was really a scam by Paquette. Why would a city attorney be trying to put together a scam to mislead the FBI? When Paquette contacted Carson, he stated Mac called him requesting to take a polygraph and requesting four key witnesses do the same. These four witnesses are in the Paquette insert, which is meaning the Paquette part of the files. It has been confirmed by civil attorneys. This was not Mac's idea, which Paquette lied to Carson about, and it's been documented in an insert and placed in the main case file. So Paul Paquette was lying, coming up with a scheme around a polygraph test that would have undermined Phil Carson's investigation.
Well, then when I get the call from Paul Paquette, who was the lead attorney for the city of Los Angeles in this civil suit, he didn't say Mac requested LAPD not be part of it. He demanded LAPD not be part of it. And the reason, as we kind of came to find out, was it was a way to basically single out the FBI and single out me to help kind of Paul Paquette pull off this whole ruse, or so he thought he was going to be able to pull it off before he got caught. And what it was is when Paul Paquette told me that he spoke to David Mack, and understand, Don, that David Mack is persona non grata. I mean, the fact that he got convicted while an LAPD officer of this bank robbery, never cooperated, never gave up who else was involved. The LAPD and the city of Los Angeles, they wanted nothing to do with this guy. They wanted to distance themselves from this guy as far as they could, and they had. And now suddenly, supposedly, the city attorney's office is talking with David Mack. David Mack doesn't have access to a phone, and he sure as hell isn't going to have a phone number to call Paul Paquette at the city attorney's office years and years after the bank robbery and after nobody wanted anything to do with the guy.
Number 11, Carson met with LA sheriffs, the San Bernardino PD, and the Orange County DA's office, who have extensive knowledge regarding the murder and investigations they have going on that parallel captioned case and involve Death Row, Suge Knight, and Right Way Securities. Now, the next portion of this document, the following is a list of leads and how they rank in priority regarding the Biggie Smalls investigation. Number one is Carson wanted to contact local Los Angeles Channel 11 Phil Schuster, who wanted to do a quick piece or segment on the Biggie Smalls murder. AUSA David Vaughn concurs this could potentially be a major break in the case if someone were to come forward. AUSA Vaughn added, because this will be run strictly in the Los Angeles area on a public station, there's no downside to doing this. Going back down the list, while in New Jersey and New York, Carson wants to locate up to five witnesses who were present during the Biggie Smalls murder. He wants to go interview Tom Sizemore regarding the letter about Parks in the LA Times. He wants to speak to Kevin Hackey. He wants to interview Mark Hyland. He wants to re-interview Harry O. He wants to interview Wayman Anderson. He wants to interview Erlyn Romero, the former girlfriend of David Mack. He also wants to interview and locate Keith Dwayne Davis, Keefy D, David Blake or DJ Quick, and Frank Alexander, who who obviously has passed away.
As I'm looking at this Rolling Stone article, I see David Mack in this article, and he's dressed in a red suit. And then I remembered from my going back and remembering from the death row party that occurred in December of 1995, the Christmas party, that I used to see him at this party all the time, okay, and at other functions that we would have.
After discussing the captioned case with AUSA Vaughn, he concurs that all the aforementioned leads should be completed. Vaughn, a former DA prosecutor for 8 years, added he does not know why the LAPD should be briefed on any interviews, sources, or potential leads that need to be done. After reviewing the most recent article written by the LA Times' Chuck Phillips regarding the San Diego operation that used a wire for an FBI source to meet with Amir Muhammad, he stated, because the LAPD potentially has much at stake regarding this murder ever being solved, especially if evidence arises that LAPD was involved or covered up the investigation, they, the LAPD, should not be made aware of ongoing leads that are being conducted by the FBI. And he reiterated, this is David Vaughn to Carson, it is a federal case and no longer a joint investigation. For more information, for video, for audio, for all the stuff that I'm talking about and more, go to www.patreon.com/dossier and subscribe today.